Hey, welcome to the Deep Dive. We're all about digging into complex topics and pulling out those essential insights, basically giving you the shortcut to being truly clued in. Today, we're embarking on a really fascinating journey into a powerful ancient narrative. It's a story from the biblical book of Esther, specifically chapter 3. And what's incredible is how many profound echoes this ancient account holds for us, right here in the modern world.
It really does. It's a story packed with intrigue, the chilling dynamics of power, and a plot that escalated with terrifying speed. It really morphed from just a personal slight into a full-blown national crisis.
Right. So our mission today is to unpack this pretty dramatic account, understand its timeless lessons, and then explore how these ancient truths can, illuminate our decisions, encourage integrity, and maybe even strengthen our resolve and faith today. Okay, let's unpack this. So the story picks up not long after a pretty pivotal moment, actually. There's this Jewish man named Mordecai, and he had actually saved King Ahasuerus' life in a previous turn of events.
Yeah, major act.
Totally. Yet, despite that heroism, the king does something, kind of unexpected. He promotes an entirely different man, Haman, an Agagite, the text says, to this position of immense power, above all the other princes.
And what's truly chilling here is how Haman's rise immediately shows a fatal flaw in him.
Mm.
This is a guy with a really volatile mix of insecurity and just unbridled ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And that combination, as we're about to see, is way more dangerous than any political skill.
Mm.
And that detail that he's an Agagite, that's actually crucial if you know the historical backdrop. It immediately signals this deep, almost ancestral conflict. It hints at what's about to explode.
Okay, right. And with this promotion came a decree. Everyone in the king's service had to bow down, show reverence to Haman. But Mordecai, our Jewish character, he had other ideas, didn't he?
He certainly did.
When the king's servants tried to enforce it, daily, pressing him, asking why he's ignoring the king's command, he just told them straight up, "I'm a Jew," and he refused to bow. That's a massive risk right there.
It is. A huge risk. And it's rooted in something much deeper than just defiance, Mordecai's refusal, it wasn't really disrespect to the king, per se. It was this profound statement about his identity, his principles, a commitment with deep roots for him as a Jew. He wouldn't offer that kind of reverence to any man if it compromised his faith or identity before God.
So it wasn't just convenience.
No, not at all. It was pure conviction.
And this is where the story takes a really dark, kind of unexpected turn. Haman sees Mordecai refusing to bow, and he isn't just annoyed. The Bible literally says he was full of wrath.
Boiling with rage.
Exactly. Just absolutely furious. But instead of just punishing Mordecai alone, Haman's anger immediately escalates.
Right.
It does.
Dramatically.
He finds out Mordecai is Jewish, and suddenly his personal problem, his bruised ego, turns into this genocidal obsession.
Precisely. If you connect this to the bigger picture, Haman's wounded pride, his personal need for vengeance, it immediately metastasizes.
Mm.
It blows up into this horrific, comprehensive plan to destroy all the Jews, not just in the capital, but throughout the entire kingdom of Ahasuerus.
Wow, the whole kingdom.
The whole kingdom. And he even casts Pur, which means lots, to determine the exact date for this horrific plan. It lands on the 13th day of the 12th month, Adar. It's almost this detached, superstitious way to schedule mass destruction.
Chilling. Then Haman goes to King Ahasuerus, but with this really cunning, manipulative argument. And notice his rhetoric here. It's brilliant, but just terrifyingly deceptive.
Yeah, he's very clever.
He doesn't mention the Jews or his personal grudge at all. Instead, he uses this vague, bureaucratic kind of language. He paints this certain people as an economic problem, a legal issue.
Right.
He claims, "Their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer them."
It's such a classic tactic, isn't it? Weaponizing these abstract claims about society's benefit to mask deep personal hate and prejudice.
Absolutely. Standard playbook for demagogues throughout history.
And then, to top it off, he offers to pay this astronomical sum, 10,000 talents of silver.
Which was a staggering amount of money, a significant chunk of the kingdom's entire annual revenue.
Just to guarantee these people are destroyed.
And the king's response, that's maybe one of the most chilling parts of the whole chapter. Without a single question, without asking for any specifics, he just takes his signet ring off his hand and gives it to Haman.
Just like that.
Just like that. He simply says, "The silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee." This is more than just delegation. It's an act of complete detached indifference, a casual throwing away of immense responsibility.
It really shows how quickly a powerful leader, if they're disengaged from the actual consequences,
mm-hmm.
can be swayed by deceitful advice and just unwittingly enabled tremendous evil. It's really unsettling how easily Haman pulls this off.
Mm-hmm.
Was the king just that naive? Or maybe something else was going on?
That's a great question. I mean, the text doesn't spell it out explicitly, but it definitely suggests a ruler who maybe prioritizes convenience or perhaps fears seeming weak over critical thinking and justice.
Yeah.
He's operating on this level of detachment that just makes him incredibly vulnerable to anyone with a persuasive, even if sinister, agenda.
Okay, so the decree is then swiftly drafted,
uh-huh.
sent out to all 127 provinces. It's this horrifying command.
Yeah.
Destroy, kill, annihilate all Jews, young, old, little children, women, all in one single day.
And adding insult to injury, their property, their spoil was to be taken as prey, looted.
It was too awful.
The post went out rapidly. The text says, hastened by the king's commandment. The decree was published right there in the palace city, Shushan. And then you get this truly chilling final image. While the city of Shushan was perplexed.
Confused, disturbed. Exactly. Confused, disturbed by this news. The king and Haman, they just sat down to drink.
Wow.
That contrast just speaks volumes about the cold, detached nature of abused power.
That final image, the city perplexed, while the architects of its fear sit down for drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really hits hard. It just perfectly captures that cold, detached nature of power when it's abused. And it leaves us with this stark, undeniable question. What are the echoes of this ancient crisis in our own modern world? What does this all mean for us today?
Exactly. And when we talk about those echoes, I think one of the loudest, clearest warnings this chapter screams out is about unchecked power. Haman's rapid rise was almost immediately followed by pride, vengeance, and this extreme abuse of authority.
Right.
It reminds us that, you know, character matters so much more than position. Position without character, that can become a grave danger. And it's not just Haman. Think about the king's almost casual giving away of responsibility, handing over his signet ring without even one question. That created the vacuum that Haman so readily filled.
Yeah.
It highlights how systemic danger often comes not just from active evil, but from, well, a passive failure of leadership.
That's such a crucial point. It's not just the villain, but also the complicity or maybe just the indifference of those in power. Mm-hmm. And we also see how quickly hatred can spread. I mean, Haman's personal grudge against one guy, Mordecai,
yeah.
it just ballooned into a national crisis threatening an entire people.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to convince the king to basically approve genocide just highlights how bias and prejudice, if you leave them unchallenged, can rapidly grow into full-blown injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Systemic evil, even.
Yeah.
And that's a stark warning for all societies, isn't it? Whether it's mm-hmm. national policy or corporate culture or even just within our own communities.
Absolutely. And this raises an important question for us, for you listening.
Mm-hmm.
Are we paying attention to the intent behind people's words? Not just the surface meaning. Haman didn't tell the king, hey, I want to kill the Jews because one guy slighted me. No.
Right.
He used that vague bureaucratic language. He framed them as this problematic, unprofitable group.
Yeah, not for the king's profit.
Exactly. So we need to be highly cautious, really skeptical
mm-hmm.
of flattery and manipulation in our own lives, both as leaders and just as individuals.
Yeah.
You know, don't let your influence outpace your wisdom. This applies everywhere. Business deals, political talk, even how we scroll through stuff online.
I always got to ask, what's the real agenda here?
Mm-hmm. You do.
But let's talk about Mordecai for a sec. His faithfulness came at a significant cost. Refusing to bow wasn't convenient. Not at all. And it definitely triggered a backlash that threatened not just his life, but the lives of all his people.
Yeah, the stakes couldn't have been higher.
But it showed this unyielding commitment to his principles, to his identity. Doing the right thing, standing on conviction, it often involves significant risk. True integrity, it seems, sometimes demands a really heavy price.
Absolutely. Standing firm in your convictions, maybe at work or in the culture around you, even in personal ethics, it might bring opposition. And you might feel like you're the only one standing sometimes.
Yeah.
But the story suggests it's always better than compromise. This encouragement to obedience, even when it's difficult, even when it's potentially costly, that can really strengthen our resolve, our commitment to ethical principles. It reinforces our trust in maybe a larger purpose.
Mm.
It reminds us they're principles worth standing for, even when the immediate cost just seems way too high.
And the story also offers this really potent cautionary tale about personal offense driving public policy. Haman's whole reaction stemmed from this deep resentment that just totally warped his judgment. It's such a powerful reminder that personal revenge should never, ever be disguised as, like, righteous action or allowed to dictate broad policy that impacts huge numbers of people.
Yeah. When leaders let personal grudges drive their decisions, the outcome can be just catastrophic for countless innocent lives.
For sure.
And finally, that detail, the city Shushan was perplexed.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It really does.
People on the ground, they recognize something wasn't right, even if they couldn't stop it immediately. And that connects so powerfully to our modern world. Unjust decisions made in high places, they often leave everyday people feeling confused, hurt, or just powerless.
Mm-hmm.
It really underscores why voices of courage and truth are so essential.
Mm-hmm.
We need people to speak out when things are clearly wrong, to help others see what's really happening behind, you know, the official statements or the spin.
Yeah. It's a call to stay discerning, right? Even when those in authority seem to be acting with total impunity.
Exactly. Keep your eyes open. So our deep dive into Esther chapter 3, it really warns us how quickly power can be abused, how prejudice can be weaponized with just clever words, and how standing with integrity can, yeah, provoke extreme retaliation.
But it also plants those seeds of hope, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It reminds us that even when you're facing an overwhelming threat, the courage of just one person standing firm in their faith and their conviction, that can be the very first step toward deliverance. It reminds us of the enduring power of conviction, even when the odds seem completely stacked against you.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you reflect on this powerful, maybe slightly disturbing story, consider this. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where standing firm in your convictions, like Mordecai did, could actually make all the difference, even if you knew it came at a significant cost?